So for the last 5 weeks or so, we've been in this series that we're calling Uncomfortable. And really at the core, kind of the heart of this series, is this idea that in order to grow in life, in order for any real change to occur, there has to be moments in our life where we are made uncomfortable, where we get outside of our comfort zone. Comfort almost never leads to growth. It is in the moments of discomfort where we grow. And I got to tell you, several months ago when I began planning this series, because we try to be, you know, two or three series ahead as we're working on these series that we want to teach, I had no idea. I mean, it had already been a hard year. It had already been a very uncomfortable year. But not in my wildest dreams did I ever imagine how much more difficult this year was actually going to get. See, back on November 6th, and I know that I shared this with a few of you in a worship gathering a few weeks ago, but on November 6th, my dad passed away very suddenly. It was not expected at all. And I got to tell you, it rocked my world in a way that... I didn't expect, let me put it that way, and forced me into a situation that was very, very, very uncomfortable, having to deal with the aftermath of that. On top of that, COVID-19, right, it ramped back up, and now as a leader of a church and of a group of people, I'm being forced into a position where I'm having to make decisions that are very, very difficult, that I would not wish on my worst enemy, to be honest with you, after the last 2 months. Really difficult situation. And then, to top it all off, about a week before Christmas, we were about to have a worship celebration, and we got kicked out of one of the buildings here at North Park because there was no heat. And then 2 days later, after I sent out communication that we were moving to this building, they told us we couldn't meet here. So I sent out another communication. And then 2 days after that, they told us we could meet again, which is awesome. Praise God. I'm so thankful that we're here. Yes, we should clap for that. But then I had to send out yet another communication, and the whole time in my perfectionist mind, I'm thinking, oh, what a nightmare. This is a disaster. People are going to be so tired of hearing from you, Justin, right? It has been, come on, can we just all be honest? It has been a very uncomfortable year on so many fronts. And so here we are in this crazy, you know, challenging, uncomfortable year, and now it's Christmas, and the year is just about to be over. But more than ever, guys, I'm reminded during this Christmas, more than any other Christmas, of the uncomfortable but beautiful, beautiful truth of Christmas. See, I don't know how many of you, like, what your picture of Christmas is like. I know for me for a long time, like, Christmas was like this perfect moment, right? It's this picturesque scene. When you think about Jesus being born and being kind of brought into the world, right? We picture sweet little baby Jesus, little 6-pound, 4-ounce baby Jesus, all snuggly and warm and cuddly, right? And we picture the snow is falling just perfectly around Joseph and Mary, and all the wise men are there, and the shepherds, and they don't smell at all, and they're just like taking it all in, drinking it all in, and it's just the perfect moment. I don't want to burst your perfect Christmas moment bubble tonight, but I do. It wasn't nothing like that. It was so messy and raw and real. It was uncomfortable in the most uncomfortable of ways. But here's the message tonight. That is a good thing. Whether you realize it or not, the uncomfortable nature of how Jesus came into this world, the messiness of it, the realness, the rawness of it, it is a good thing. Now, the gospel writer Luke, I believe, paints an amazing picture of what happened on that night over 2,000 years ago. And we're going to read this here in a second. It's found over in Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 1. If you have a Bible, I encourage you to open up there with us. We're going to read the Christmas story here tonight. This is Luke's account. He's a historian. He goes into great detail about what's happening here. It begins with this. He says, "In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. It says this was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be registered, each to his own town. Joseph also, it says, went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. He went there to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who happened to be with child. It says, while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son, and she wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. And in the same region, there were shepherds out in the field keeping watch over their flock by night. And an angel of the Lord appeared to them. And it says, the glory of the Lord shone around them. And they were filled with great fear. And the angel said to them, fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in swaddling cloths and lying in a manger. Suddenly it says there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly hosts praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among those with whom he is pleased. You know, many of us, we have read that story before, haven't we? We've either read it before or someone has read it to us. But I want to ask you for just a brief moment as we're pausing and reflecting on Christmas for yet another year to see the reality of what is actually happening here. I want to paint a picture for you of the messiness and the uncomfortableness of this entire situation. I want you to put yourself in their place. I want you to imagine with me what is really going on here. So first of all, Joseph and Mary are engaged to be married, and everything is going perfect. They're living the dream. They're ready. Everything is just going exactly according to plan. And then all of a sudden, one day, Joseph discovers that Mary is pregnant. And it ain't his. I mean, come on. I want you to just put yourself in that situation. I mean, Joseph has got to be freaking out a little bit, right? This woman that he is to be married to is pregnant, and it's not his child. What a mess, right? Mary, put yourself in her shoes for a second. Come on, ladies in the room, imagine. You're going around and you have to tell everybody that you're pregnant, but it's not to your fiance. It's not even to some random guy. It's God who has impregnated. Just think about the insanity of that, the uncomfortable nature of that. And yet I think what's so amazing to me about Joseph and Mary is how they handled this situation. Because that would have been incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable. Just imagine the judgment and the shame as they had to walk around for months and months being looked at, stared at, talked about behind their back. Would have been an unbelievably uncomfortable situation for the two of them. And yet they trusted God and they kept going. Now, let's fast forward 9 months. 9 months later, just about 9 months later, Mary is about ready to pop, okay? She's ready to have this child. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this guy by the name of Caesar Augustus. Now, Augustus meant exalted one. He was the very first emperor in Roman history, meaning he was the first kind of all-powerful Roman leader. Before that, they had more of a democratic-type society. And so Caesar Augustus decides, right in the middle of this pregnancy, everybody is going to have to go to their hometown, not just the town you're in, but your hometown, and you're going to have to register for a census. Now, in the past, the only people who registered for the census were people who were going to be signing up for the military. But in this case, this guy, Caesar Augustus, he is completely off his rocker. He is a power-hungry maniac in a lot of ways, and he wants to know the entirety of what he oversees and what he rules over. And so he sends Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, where they must register for this census. Now, again, I want you to just put yourself in their place for a second. Okay, Mary's 9 months pregnant. She's just about to have this baby. Joseph is like, I've never had to do this before. Like, what's the deal? Why do I have to do this? This is, come on, what a mess. This is insanity. Now, here's something that we need to understand. Context is so important. The journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem is not like this nice little half-mile walk. It's 70 miles over rocky terrain in the middle of desert-like conditions, and Joseph has a pregnant wife. Can you imagine how many times they had to stop to pee? I mean, seriously, right? Think about this. Put yourself in their position for a second. If I'm Joseph, I'm halfway through that 70-mile journey, and you know, you've had to stop 14 times for the bathroom. The donkey's probably got a bad wheel at this point, right? It's hot, it's humid. You don't know if Mary's literally going to have that baby right in the middle of this journey because she's ready. I mean, think about it. Put yourself in their shoes. Think of the uncomfortable nature of what they were going through. If it's me, if I'm Joseph, I sound more like Joseph Pesci. You guys know Joe Pesci? You ever see the movie Home Alone? You ever see that movie? I'm like, you gotta be kidding me, right? Are you kidding me right now, God? We could have had this baby in Nazareth. You could have made this census happen 3 months from now or 3 months earlier. No, it's got to be right when Mary is about ready to have this baby. And so they actually amazingly make it all the way to Bethlehem, only to discover when they get there that the town is crawling with people. I mean, there are people everywhere. And when they show up, the first thing they do is they go to look for a place to stay. They need a hotel, right? And so they go to the first hotel, and guess what? We're sorry. Inn's full. Hotel's full. Don't you look around. There are thousands of people here for the census. There's no place to stay. I'm sorry. So they move to the next place. Nope. Sorry, no room here. They move to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And imagine, okay, you've got a pregnant wife. She is now beginning to go into labor, and you have no place to go. Again, think about the uncomfortable situation. Think about the mess that they're in this moment. And so finally, they give up. I don't know where we're going to go, but none of these hotels, these inns, it's not happening. Fortunately, somebody recognizes their plight, and they offer them a stable to stay in. Now, when you think stable, you might think, oh, this nice, you know, it's got a nice bed of straw, and, you know, it's probably not that bad, right? We're not talking about a stable that they had time to clean out and decorate and make nice. No, we're talking about a nasty stable with animals, live animals that have not been washed or cleaned, with animal stuff laying all over the ground where she's about to have this baby. And once again, if I'm Joseph and if I'm Mary, I'm thinking, what in the world? God, what are you doing here? Couldn't you have made this easier? If it's me, I'm thinking, what a mess. God, where are you? And then, on that very first Christmas, over 2,000 years ago, the God of the universe entered into that mess in the form of a baby boy, a helpless baby boy. And I have to believe that as Joseph and Mary, as they held Jesus for the very first time, I have to imagine that all of the uncomfortableness of that last year, and particularly of the last few weeks, I have to imagine that all of that just melted away. Because the reality is this, is that when Jesus entered into the world, the writer of Hebrews says that Jesus is the radiance. The Son is the radiance of God's glory. That the literal glory of God entered into the world in that moment. And I have to imagine all the struggle and all the pain and all the suffering and all the uncomfortableness of that moment, I have to imagine it just faded away. And in a way that had never been before, I have to imagine this is what they thought to themselves. God is here. Like he's really here. He is with us. See, in that moment, I believe God said, "Here I am. I am with you." That's what's happening in that stable 2,000 years ago. God is saying for the very first time, in a way that I never have been before, I am close. I am so very near to you. See, maybe you've felt like this year has been just the most difficult and uncomfortable year of your life. Maybe you have felt like you have had door after door after door slammed in your face. Maybe nothing has gone right for you. Maybe you felt like this world or your life, like nothing is nothing but a mess. That the whole thing just, I mean, I have felt that way this year at times. As I have looked around our world, as I've looked around our country, as I've thought about my own life, right? What a mess we are in. But on this Christmas 2020, this is what I want you to hear. After the year that we've had, this is the truth and the hope of Christmas. This is the truth and the hope of Jesus. Yes, life is messy. It is so very messy. And it's uncomfortable. But he is with us in the mess. He's with us in the mess. Christmas is the ultimate reminder that Jesus entered into our mess. He did not have to, but he chose to enter into the mess. God showed up, and in the middle of our mess, God is in our mess. Let me say that again. God showed up, and in the middle of our mess, God is in our mess. He is with us. He is close. You see, everything about your life right now might feel chaotic. Maybe there's parts of it that feel broken. Maybe this year might be the messiest you've experienced in a long time. It definitely has been for me. But this is the reminder of Christmas, that Jesus put himself in the most uncomfortable of situations, in the most uncomfortable position, by lowering himself into our mess so that he could fix our mess once and for all. Christmas is the reminder that Jesus was willing to put himself in the most uncomfortable of situations, not for his own benefit, but for our benefit. You see, the reason that Christmas is uncomfortable, but it's a beautiful uncomfortable, is because Jesus didn't come down as this king who lorded over us and said, "Look at me, look how great I am," even though he was. What he did was he entered into our mess and said, "I'm going to lower myself, make myself uncomfortable by becoming like you so that you will be able to see once and for all how much I love you, how much I care about you, the lengths that I am willing to go to, the uncomfortable lengths that I am willing to go to save you." This is the beauty of Christmas. I love how Hebrews 4 puts this, the writer of Hebrews in chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. Think about this with me for a second. This is the God of the universe, who is so much bigger and grander and more glorious than we can imagine. We don't even deserve to be within the sun's distance of him. And he came to be right there with us, right next to us. It says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses. We have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, and yet he did not sin." He went through all of the crud that a human being goes through. He bled. He sweated. There were tears. There were struggles. There were difficulties. And ultimately, there was death on a cross, the most uncomfortable death you can imagine. It says, because of that, it says, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. I want you to see two things here tonight. Number one, the writer of Hebrews is saying he understands our mess because he lived in our mess. He was literally born onto the floor of a stable. That's what he was born into. He understands it all. He understands every single thing we go through. He knows how hard it is. But second of all, Jesus says that we can approach him with confidence so that we may receive what? Mercy and grace in our time of need. Christmas means that we can draw near to him. He is closer than he has ever been. He is here with us now. And so here's my question. As we close out this year and yet another Christmas in the middle of your mess, do you trust that he is in the mess? That's a question I've had to ask myself a lot this year. But Christmas has been reminding me that he absolutely is. He is not a God who is distant. He is near and he understands. Why? Because while he is God, he is also human. He made himself human so that we could understand him. And so that he, and this is the beauty of this, so that he could fully understand us. Think about that for a second. Jesus came to this world knowing all of the pain and suffering that he would go through so that he could understand you, so that he could empathize with your pain and your struggle. And that is what makes him an amazing king, an amazing Savior, worthy of following. He's not distant. He's close. So in the middle of that sin that we can't stop, in the middle of the health crisis that we're dealing with that's out of our control, in the middle of our pain and our difficult situation, in the middle of that relationship that doesn't seem like it's getting any better, in the middle of our mess, God is in our mess. In the middle of our mess, Jesus is right there walking with us. This is the hope of Christmas, that no matter how messy life gets, whether it's a mess we make ourselves of our own volition, of our own choices, or a mess that we had nothing to do with that has just happened to us and is out of our control, this is the truth tonight, that Jesus cleaned up our mess on the cross. He cleaned up our mess on the cross. This is the gospel. He chose not to hold our mess against us. He chose that even though we should be the ones that should have to clean it up. I mean, I want you to think about this with me for a second. God sent his son into this world to clean up a mess by dying for us that he did not create or make. I don't know how many of you are parents, but if you are, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you aren't, I want you to imagine it. I want you to imagine that some criminal commits an unbelievably awful crime. And then I want you to imagine you sending your son or your daughter to pay the penalty for what that criminal did. That's what Jesus did for us. That's the truth. He didn't deserve it. He didn't have to do it, but he did. And for me, in what has been one of the most unbelievably difficult years of my life, I cling to that. I cling to that hope. I cling to that future that Jesus gives me. And it all started at Christmas over 2,000 years ago. You see, Christmas was the start, but the cross was the finish. He came ultimately. This is why he came. Yes, he was born, and there's this beautiful story. There's this manger scene. But at the end of the day, the reason he came was to die. He was born so that he could die. But the great news today is that he did not stay dead. He lives, and because he lives, every one of us has an opportunity to have hope, to have a future. This is the gospel. He didn't make himself uncomfortable, guys, because he didn't think you were worth it. He made himself uncomfortable because you are worth it. And so I don't know, maybe tonight as we wrap this up, maybe it's been a long time since you were in church. Maybe this year you've just gotten distant from God, or maybe you felt like he was distant from you. But I want to encourage you to remember that in the middle of your mess, God is in your mess. The Christmas means that Jesus is close. He is here. He is for you. He is with you. And tonight on Christmas 2020, I believe he should be glorified and lifted up and put on his throne because of that. So tonight we're gonna close out this moment. We're going to light some candles. And I know that this is kind of like a traditional thing that happens all over the United States. It probably happens maybe other parts of the world. And it's a really kind of awesome and warm, fuzzy kind of moment. And we're going to start lighting candles. We've got some people coming around. They're going to get your candles going. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and light the persons next to you. But here's what I want to encourage you with tonight. Can we not let this just be another candle lighting moment? John 8:12 says that Jesus is the light of the world. Whoever walks with him will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus is the light of the world, and it came into the world on Christmas 2,000 years ago. And so, here's what I'm asking you to do. As we sing, will you worship him tonight? Will you worship him for coming into this world for you? Will you worship him because he made himself uncomfortable for you when he didn't have to? He is the hope of the world. He is the light of the world. Would you stand with me and celebrate as we sing? And then we'll come back up and we'll close out here in just a few minutes.